It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Wisconsin is among a group of states seeing lower crime rates and lower incarceration rates. We'll look at what's changing and why. First, Governor Walker has been touring the state to drum up support for a package of bills meant to overhaul Wisconsin's welfare system. He was joined by former Governor Tommy Thompson last week to make a case for the proposed changes. Not everyone is on board. Opponents say it penalizes people who need the most help, and the legislature might not be entirely sold on Walker's plan given the estimated cost of putting those changes into practice. Laurel White is the state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Laurel, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Laurel, lay out some of the basics. What is the governor looking to change here?
Well, there are 10 bills in this package. This is part of the special session on welfare that the governor called for a couple weeks ago. And there are, you know, a handful of bills that are getting the most attention. One of those is a bill that would require photo IDs for food share users in Wisconsin, so they'd have to present that ID to claim their benefits. Another would increase work or job training requirements for people who want to use food share benefits in Wisconsin. So that's something that was implemented in 2015, and there are currently 20 hours a week of required either, having a job, putting in hours at that job, or receiving training toward future employment. That would increase to 30 hours under this plan. And then a couple other bills in the package, and we can get as detailed as you want about these, would do things like set a personal asset requirement for how much your home or your vehicle is worth in order to qualify for benefits, and also begin implementing drug testing for people who want to live in state-sponsored housing.
And when he talks about this overall, what are the goals the governor's laying out here? What's he hoping to accomplish?
Well, the governor's been talking a lot about the unemployment rate in the state of Wisconsin lately. It's the lowest it's been since 1999, and so he's saying we need to get more people in the workforce. And this package of bills is aimed at doing that. He says it's going to help identify people who need job training, who maybe have a substance abuse problem, who need that little extra support or push to get into the workforce. And he's also saying that it's going to cut down on things like fraud and abuse of the system. So the people that are getting these benefits really genuinely need them.
And former Governor Tommy Thompson joined current Governor Walker in making the case for this plan at an event a few days ago. Talk about former Governor Thompson. He has a lot of political capital when it comes to changing welfare systems.
He does. So some folks might remember that was a big element of his policy legacy, I guess you could call it. When he was governor, he had a series of welfare changes. So I think it's safe to say that Governor Walker is kind of trying to tie his package of bills to the things that Governor Thompson did when he was in office and say, you know, those changes back then were good for the state of Wisconsin. I'm wanting to make even more improvements to make our workforce stronger, to provide more support for people. But as the governor likes to say, he wants these programs to be a trampoline and not a hammock. So encouraging people to use them while they need them, but not use them for too long.
What have Republicans in the legislature said? What's been their response? They're the ones who would have to pass all this.
Well, we got a public hearing on these bills last week, and so we really got more of an opportunity to hear not only from, you know, a variety of social service groups that testified primarily in opposition to the bills, but from some of the Republican lawmakers that are clearly going to vote for them. And, you know, two of those prominent individuals are Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who's sponsoring all these bills in the Assembly, and then Senator Chris Kapinga, who is sponsoring them in the Senate. And they're really reiterating the points that the governor's making, that these are really going to cut down on fraud, that they're programs that, you know, they're compassionate. They're trying to get people the job training they need so they have jobs that are going to be family-sustaining jobs, good jobs, so they can contribute to the economy of Wisconsin. So there was certainly some pushback on the bills during that public hearing last week, but a lot of enthusiasm from Republican lawmakers, too.
Talking to WPR's Laurel White, state capitol reporter, looking at a package of legislation Governor Walker and legislative Republicans are pushing to change public assistance programs in the state. And Laurel, let's get into some of that pushback you were talking about. What concerns were raised at those public hearings?
Well, there was a big coalition of social service organizations that actually had a press conference on, I think it was Tuesday morning, that the public hearing was on this package of bills. And they said that it's really going to make it too difficult for a lot of people to get the support that they need from the state. There were people that testified who have used these benefits in the past, which is something that we don't get incredibly often in the Capitol, kind of those real people being able to come in and testify during the work week on bills. And so getting their insight was interesting. There were a couple groups that testified about that worker training program, that hours would be increased for under this proposal. It would go from 20 hours a week to 30 hours a week. And they said that training program really hasn't been successful in getting people long-term employment. They say that in their experience, it's been sort of short-term job after short-term job and kind of cycling people in and out of things to say that they're employed, but not getting them training for something that they can stay in for a while that's really going to be sustainable and family supporting over time.
What's the timeline now? The special session is underway, I guess, effective when the governor said there was a special session. Mm-hmm. When will this all pass or not?
Well, we're expecting the legislature to wrap up in late March. They could go as late as May, early May, but we doubt that's going to happen. So we're on a little bit of a time crunch. It's going to happen probably soon. The governor and Republican leaders have said they are optimistic that this is going to pass before lawmakers finish up this spring. So we would need to get through some committee votes and get both of these bills to both chambers on the floor before they can get to the governor.
And Laurel, before we let you go, I want to switch gears to some news out today. We've been hearing this developing story about Kimberly-Clark, the corporation. First, they announced they're going to be announcing closures and job losses. Then we heard that, yeah, that's going to affect Wisconsin, especially in the Fox Valley area. And now what is the governor saying today?
Well, the governor tweeted this morning that he wants to offer Kimberly-Clark the same incentives, the same tax incentives, particularly that the state offered Foxconn. So right now, Kimberly-Clark gets 7% in tax rebates, 7% on their entire payments out to employees, their payroll. That would increase to 17% credit under the governor's proposal. Now, this is something that would have to be approved by the entire state legislature. So it is just a proposal right now, but it's definitely getting a lot of attention.
And I understand a group of Democrats were planning an announcement, some kind of effort, a proposal to keep Kimberly-Clark from closing those plants or keeping some of those jobs in the state?
Mm-hmm, that's right. And I believe that they have rolled that out as of now. It's four Democratic lawmakers, I believe. And that's a smaller proposal in terms of spending than the governor's. I believe that one is about $60 million. So kind of, you know, same goal, providing support to Kimberly-Clark, trying to get them to keep some of those jobs. 600 jobs, I believe, was the cut that was floated out there in the state of Wisconsin. So it sounds like there might be some back and forth between maybe Democratic and Republican proposals in the coming days.
We'll leave it there for now. Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Laurel White, state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. She joins us today to talk about the governor's proposed changes to public assistance programs. Also got an update on the governor's response to the Kimberly-Clark plant closing announcement. Right now, Wisconsin was one of 35 states to cut both crime rates and imprisonment rates in 2016, according to a Pew study of federal data. During the past 8 years, the state saw drops in crime and imprisonment rates, each by 26%. Michael O'Hare is a professor of law at Marquette University and the author of two books about sentencing and incarceration reform. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
I'm very happy to be here, Rob. Thanks.
Michael, let's start with the crime rates. I think we see a lot of crime stories in the news, some upticks in homicide rates in some cities over the last couple of years. Big picture, though, are we seeing crime on the way down in Wisconsin and around the country?
Yeah, big picture, crime continues to go down nationally and in the state, and it has been on a very long-term downward trajectory since the early 1990s. It's interesting, if you look at the public opinion surveys, most Americans state that crime is getting worse. That's the perception that seems to be out there, but the data shows that that's just not true. Now, with the Wisconsin numbers, there's a little bit of a qualification that I think is in order. The Pew study reports a 26% drop in the crime rate between 2008 and 2016, and that is correct, but it's important to realize that that includes both property crime and violent crime. And property crime is far more prevalent than violent crime, so the overall drop reflects a drop in property crime. If you focus just on violent crime, which tends to be what members of the public are most concerned about, violent crime is actually up a little bit. So the overall drop reflects a large drop in property crime offsetting a very small increase in violent crime.
And then let's look at the incarceration side of things. We hear a lot about sentencing reform, changes in our prison system. Where is this decline in Wisconsin's incarcerated population coming from?
Yeah, and there I have to correct something that's in the Pew report. I did take a look at the Pew report, and the data is incorrect. The data is based on federal data from the Bureau of Justice Statistics. And the numbers didn't seem right to me. So I went back and ran them myself, and it's not a 26% decline. It's instead a 4% decline, which is nice. You know, it's better to be moving in that direction than to have a growing rate of imprisonment. But it's not nearly as big a drop as that Pew study reported. As far as what is causing that, I think there are at least a couple of significant causes. One is that the Department of Corrections has been handling people on supervision differently. Wisconsin historically has had a very high revocation rate, which means that when people are on supervision in the community, if they mess up, if they violate some conditions in the past, Wisconsin's been pretty quick to revoke supervision and send people into prison. And the Department of Corrections has been making some policy changes in recent years to try to reduce excessive and unnecessary revocations. Another big change that's happened is with drug incarceration and the number of people being sent into our prison system for drug crimes has dropped actually pretty sharply since 2008. And a lot of that has to do with things going on in Milwaukee County. Obviously, Milwaukee is the largest contributor to state criminal justice data, and Milwaukee has been handling drug offenses quite differently over the past decade or so, and relying a lot more on diversions from prison and treatment. So you see that reflected in this drop in the imprisonment rate in the state.
Is that a Milwaukee County-only story, or are you seeing similar things going on elsewhere in the state, though obviously with lower populations, it won't have maybe as big an impact on the overall state numbers?
Absolutely. It's something that's happening in really a growing number of counties around the state, but Milwaukee County is having the biggest impact on the overall state criminal justice numbers.
When we talk about crime and incarceration, one argument has been, okay, we've been seeing lower crime numbers as compared to especially the 80s and 90s, in part because we're incarcerating more people. The people who are committing crimes aren't on the streets. If we're seeing both of those numbers go down, crime rates and incarceration rates, what, if anything, does that tell us?
Well, I think the number one lesson is that there's only a loose relationship between incarceration rates and crime rates. And more broadly, I think people have a misimpression about how much the criminal justice system can do to control crime rates. Crime is a very complicated social phenomenon, and there are lots of things that caused crime to move up or down, and criminal justice policies at most are going to have a pretty modest impact on crime rates. But the other lesson, I think, from the whole big picture story of what's happened since the 1970s with crime and imprisonment, is that probably in the 1970s we were somewhat under incarcerating, and as incarceration rates grew in the 1970s and 1980s, that did eventually, and through into the early 1990s, that did probably have a positive impact on crime rates. But we just kept growing and growing our prison population nationally and in Wisconsin past the point where it was really having much of a public safety benefit. And the researchers who have done the most sophisticated statistical analysis of this data nationally have concluded that the incarceration increases in the 70s and 80s were probably somewhat helpful on the public safety front. And then as we got into the 90s and more recently, we've just been putting more and more people into prison with little or no demonstrable public safety benefit.
And people are starting to look at the cost of incarceration. Is that an effect? Is that having an effect on how people are managing this issue in state legislatures and in at the county level?
Yeah, absolutely. Incarceration is a very expensive way to respond to crime, and the national average for cost of imprisonment is about $40,000 a year. So, you know, nationally we're looking at hundreds of thousands of prisoners. In Wisconsin, 23,000 prisoners. You know, you do the math; these become some pretty significant numbers. And state legislatures pay attention. I don't think that there's any coincidence that you really started to see an initial wave of state reform right around the time of the 2001 recession, which put a big hit into state budgets around the country, and that caused legislators to become more interested in adopting criminal justice reforms that would reduce over-reliance on incarceration. And then you see another wave right around the time of the 2007-2008 recession, when legislators once again had to be thinking very critically about their expenditures and looking for ways to save money. So there's no question that the cost of incarceration has been a very significant driver of criminal justice reform in this country over the past two decades.
Michael O'Hara is with us, professor of law at Marquette University. We're looking at declining incarceration numbers a little bit here in Wisconsin, declining crime numbers, especially property crime numbers in Wisconsin and around the country. Michael, assuming that everybody is interested in lowering the rates of crime, I don't think that's too controversial, and hearing that incarceration beyond a certain point isn't cost effective, there's diminishing returns there. Do we know what does work in lowering crime rates apart from a certain level of incarceration?
Well, certainly there are a lot of programs, of rehabilitative programs that have been demonstrated to be effective in reducing recidivism rates. Now, I have to be clear here, there's nothing that is 100% effective that will cure, if you will, every single criminal offender, but there's been a ton of research that's been done over the past few decades on a wide variety of different programs, and we know that things like drug treatment programs run in the correct way with good funding. We know drug treatment programs are effective in reducing recidivism rates, and we know that education in prisons is helpful in reducing recidivism rates, and vocational training and various kinds of cognitive behavioral therapy. These things have been demonstrated to be effective in reducing recidivism rates. So one of the best things that we can do to deal with crime rates is to do a better job of dealing with the underlying issues of offenders as they enter into the criminal justice system. And people in the system are becoming more and more sensitive to this. And I think there has been a significant amount of progress made in Wisconsin and nationally around this this goal of reducing recidivism by making greater use of evidence-based programming.
One of the big stories in the state lately in the last couple of years is the opioid epidemic. A lot of people are calling it prescription drugs, illegally obtained prescription drugs, illegal drugs themselves. Are there lessons from past drug problems from the criminal justice system dealing with them that we should, you think, be applying in 2018?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And there's just such a stark contrast to be drawn between this opioid epidemic that we're experiencing today and the crack cocaine epidemic of the mid-1980s through early 1990s. I've done a fair bit of research on that time period, and the response to crack cocaine was really a panicked response nationally and also in Wisconsin, too. And the response was one of getting tough on these drug offenses. And so incarceration rates for drug crime skyrocketed in that time period. And it just wasn't effective. It was very costly, and it diverted a lot of money that could have been much better spent on treatment for people with drug problems. And I think you're seeing that at least to some extent we've learned some of those lessons as a society with the opioid epidemic. There has been much less tendency to rush to adopt new mandatory minimum prison terms for drug crimes, and more of an attempt to develop a balanced response to the opioid epidemic that incorporates funding for treatment as well as enhanced criminal justice responses.
We'll leave it there for now, Michael. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
That's Michael O'Hare, professor of law at Marquette University, joining us to look at falling crime and imprisonment rates across the country and in Wisconsin. Now it's the first Monday of February, which means WPR Director Mike Crane is with us. On the first Monday of each month, he or WPR Director of Content Mike Arnold join the morning show or us here on Central Time for Mondays with Mike. They share the latest news about WPR programming and events, and they answer your questions. You can call in at 800-642-1234. What questions or comments do you have about programming or news coverage or whatever at Wisconsin Public Radio? What feedback do you have for us? Do you want us to do more of something, less of something? Let us know. You can call 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or at Central Time WPR on Twitter. Mike, welcome back.
It's always good to be here and to talk with our listeners.
Well, let's start with something I just mentioned, actually. We're going to be talking to state Supreme Court candidates this week. I can give the details. I know what's going on. It's 4 o'clock. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday we'll meet each of the candidates. Can you talk about, this is something we do every election season.
You know, we've been doing this for a few years.
Yeah.
like since the 1930s, actually. Uh-huh. Something that anyone who's heard me on these shows knows, I love the history of WPR. And early on, the people that were the founders and the early people working at what's now WPR thought, you know, we could help make Wisconsin a better place if we could hear from the people that are the politicians and the judges and all of that. And so for many, many years, we've been inviting people that are running for statewide office to come and talk with you on the radio. And so as usual, so that's really good.
We're going to follow up. This is the primary now, right. So we've got three candidates that will be sifted and winnowed, as we say in Wisconsin, down to two in the primary election. And I think our colleagues on the morning show are going to pick up the thread there.
That's right. On April 4th, there's the spring election, so it'll be right before that we'll arrange that. And so we'll be looking forward to hearing that as well.
And then you've got some updates, I think, for the NPR News and Classical Music Network. Now, maybe we should get to the basics here. I talk to people all the time who know about the Ideas Network that we're on right now and not the other one. I also meet people who have no idea who I am because they love the other network and don't know the Ideas Network exists.
That's right. You know, people tend to think, well, you must have a lot of crossover between the two audiences because it's all Wisconsin Public Radio. Typically, when we've looked at it, it might be as many as 30%, and I think that's probably from some of the really big popular shows on the weekends that pretty much any NPR fan might be looking for, or some of our own shows as well, like Garden Talk or things like that. And so, yes, there is another WPR network. It's heard through most of the state and also online at WPR.org. It's the NPR News and Classical Network. And they're doing, speaking of politics, a really cool thing now on a regular basis. We have our WPR Politics podcast. and it becomes a radio broadcast every so often on All Things Considered. In February, it's going to be on Fridays at 5:45 during All Things Considered. So after you've listened to a full 2 hours of Central Time, if you tune over to the other network, you'd find it there. And you'll hear the same people sometimes right here, including Laura White and Sean Johnson and John, who's the host of the show. It's a really fun show. And John Wilson and the team will be doing a road show soon. I'm really excited about this. So we'll tell you more about that as we go along. Basically, if politics is your thing, check out the WPR Politics Podcast.
Right, so they can hear that actually on the radio, and then, of course, anytime, WPR.org, that's out there.
Yep, and I've got it on my iPhone. You can find it in the Google Play thing as well, because it's everywhere you could find a podcast, pretty much.
Talking to Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio, sharing some of the latest news here. And you can call in with your questions for Mike or comments about Wisconsin Public Radio. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Hey, let's get social, Mike. Mm-hmm. We've just had a big change to our social media, particularly our Facebook presence here at the Ideas Network.
Yeah, and basically what we've done is we've decided that we should consolidate a lot of the separate show pages on Facebook and put it all into the Ideas Network basket. And that's because often what we were finding is that we had a couple of little islands that weren't all that well, metaphorically, weren't all that well connected, and instead we're building a little bigger continent of the Ideas Network. So it's facebook.com/TheIdeasNetwork. And so if you haven't liked that already, do it. It's a great way to communicate with this show and the other shows and to see what other people are thinking about things and all the different opportunities. It's still there, just at that spot.
And this is something we've been talking about for a while, but now it's actually, as of this month, we're not posting to, say, the Central Time page or the Morning Show page anymore. If you want it, it's going to be at the Ideas Network Facebook page.
That's right.
Again, you can call in at 800-642-1234. Let's keep bopping back and forth here. Let's get into some classical music now, Mike. We are airing, this is great, some performances from the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. That's continuing. What's going on?
That's right. And so for folks in Milwaukee that would like to hear it, they should go to WPR.org to listen or use the WPR app. You could find it there as well. This is Sunday afternoons at 2 o'clock on the NPR News and Classical Music Network of WPR. And one of the things I love is that even though this is a national broadcast produced in Chicago, we have our very own Laurie Skelton, who people listening to the Ideas Network would know her from the Food Friday segments.
Right.
But she's also an incredibly knowledgeable classical music host and performer and other things as well. But she is the host of that Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra broadcast throughout the next number of weeks.
Great. Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. We have Mark on the line in Milwaukee. Mark, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Mark?
Well, I'd like to maybe hear a story on the changing face of public assistance. It seems like it used to be welfare for individuals, and now it seems to be handouts to our corporate citizens. Foxconn, maybe Kimberly Clark, definitely sports arenas.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Those are all issues we've tackled individually, mm-hmm. public assistance reforms and corporate aid. But I don't know that we've done a lot kind of comparing the two and kind of putting them in the same basket.
Yeah, that's interesting. No surprise that Mark, like many of our listeners, puts things together in new ways and helps us to think about what we might want to cover in a different way. Thanks, Mark.
And speaking of covering things in new ways, WPR Next is still in action, an effort to bring a new program onto Wisconsin Public Radio. We've been touching base on this on Mondays with Mike mm-hmm. for a while. What's our latest news there, Mike?
Well, we had a lot of really interesting things to listen to and heard some wonderful talent doing the various pilots, and we have set one in motion now. I'm really excited about this, so that it's going to have at least a 26-episode run, which is, in radio terms, that's a full year, because mm-hmm. you tend to repeat everything once. And we'll have the first two episodes online already for at wpr.org/beta, B-E-T-A. Then we're also starting in April going to have the regular show on the radio. I love Doug Gordon, who described the show. He wrote this up about the show, and I love it. Beta is a polyphonic mosh pit where high culture and low culture collide, taking an immersive, innovative, playful, and provocative approach to exploring arts, culture, and technology. Now, if you've heard any of Doug's interviews on To the Best of Our Knowledge, yeah, it's that. Mm-hmm. You know, Doug is just an incredibly creative individual, asks great questions, gets really interesting guests, and we'll have a schedule out for when that's going to be by the time we get to April. We're still figuring out exactly where it goes in the schedule, but it's coming up.
And that'll be fun. I mean, seeing Doug Gordon behind the scenes at WPR, we all know he has a very unique sense of humor, comes at stories and ideas in a fun, exciting way, I think. And I think this will be a chance for that really to shine through for listeners.
That's right. Among the things I remember was for quite a while he was talking about the Zombeetles.
Right.
They were zombies and they were beetles. And Doug's a great talent, and looking forward to hearing more from him.
It is Mondays with Mike. Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio, stays with us to share the latest details about Wisconsin Public Radio and answer your questions. And if you have a question or comment about what you hear or don't hear at Wisconsin Public Radio, call in now at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions or thoughts about our programming? What suggestions do you have? What issues in your community would you like to see covered? You can call in at 800-642-1234, tweet us at Central Time WPR, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we pick up our conversation with Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio, about the latest news about the Ideas Network and the News and Classical Music Network. Join us with your thoughts, questions, and comments at 800-642-1234 or tweet us at ideas@wpr.org, at Central Time WPR on Twitter, or email ideas@wpr.org. Back to your calls now. Ron is with us in Norwalk. Ron, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon, Rob and Mike.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment, and I know this is really going to sound nitpicky, but when it comes to your host, one of the things that I've noticed, that it's not just Wisconsin Public Radio, but it's NPR and all the other news networks, really, if you think about it, is when the hosts are speaking, they use a lot of thinking sounds, like ahs and ums.
Huh.
And you know, that's my pet peeve, is the you know. But what I'd ask your host to do is just take 5 minutes of their program and just keep track of all the thinking sounds that they make, and just be aware of it. And it's something that, in public speaking, I think it can be a little bit distracting, and I think we could all do better at that.
Ron, thanks a lot for the call. Mike,
we're joking.
No, I hear you.
This is the thing, Ron, that I really do understand what you're talking about. And as we're improvising every show live, it is a real challenge to accept pausing like I just did. Radio people are taught to never leave dead air, and so we probably substitute the ums, the likes, the things like that more than we should. One of the processes that you're suggesting is actually something we do, which is to do what we call air checks, mm-hmm. and to listen to ourselves as critically as we can to try to improve. And sometimes we miss the mark. So thanks for reminding us of that.
Ron, thanks a lot. Yeah, and I do, and I probably do for some more air checks myself. And there are times I listen to myself and think, oh, this guy sounds all right. And there are times I listen to myself and I hear exactly the kind of things Ron's talking about. Why did I say twice there? I didn't need to do that. And just having that breath is okay. And as you say, we're allergic to silence,
yeah.
on the radio.
Well,
it sounds all we got.
Here's an example, too, that we were noticing as we were listening to the newscast earlier this hour. We could tell that Brady really needed to or something like that, but he was trying so hard not to.
I've been there.
Because that is in our training, to try to always just continue the sentences and all of that. you can say, even now, I'm uncomfortable with just pausing right there, and that's the radio training. Thanks, Ron.
Ron, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Jerry in southeast Minnesota. Jerry, hi.
Hi. I think you guys do a great job with, you know, my wife and I are lifelong listeners to the radio, Wisconsin Public Radio. One of the things that I wish that maybe you could improve on, I don't know if it's a technology improvement or something, but frequently if I'm driving home from work in the afternoon and I'm listening to NPR or Wisconsin Public Radio, the person that is calling in, the guest, is probably on a telephone from somewhere, and they tend to be the sound is much lower. And then when the host speaks, that person's very loud. So you find that you're turning the radio up, then you're turning it down in order to keep some kind of an even thing. And I'm wondering, is there any way that could be improved?
And Jerry, can I ask which call sign or which numbers are you listening on?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I don't pay a lot of attention to that. I'm right near La Crosse. Wisconsin.
Okay,
yeah,
that'll narrow it down.
It's probably WHLA.
But my understanding, Mike, it was explained to me, and I'm not a technical guy, that the transmitters were supposed to equalize the sound at least to a certain extent. So maybe that's something at that transmitter, or maybe it's something from our end. I don't know.
Yeah, you're onto exactly the questions. It could be that we need to be even more attentive to keeping the sound of the phones up, or it could be the transmitter. We'll look into both of those. One of the things that is an absolute audio challenge is that phone lines are worse than they ever were. You know, you'd think they'd sound great in the digital era, but they're squeezing so much into those little phone lines. And when you're looking at the meters that we all look at, you may see that the phone call appears to be as loud as the host. But the reason it seems so loud is that there's a lot of background noise or something else that is causing the meter to read loud rather than for it to sound loud. And if you think of it, if people have this kind of thing like that, you know, some kind of noise in the line or muffling, that's another reason why we'd want it louder, just thinking, well, maybe then I can hear it. So, Jerry, thanks for the tip. We'll take a look at both of those possibilities and see if we can improve it.
Thanks, Jerry. We're talking to WPR Director Mike Crane. It's Mondays with Mike, taking your calls, your questions, comments about what we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in at 800-642-1234. A caller in Rhinelander couldn't stay on the line, but said they don't like the Ideas Network tagline we've been using for a while. That's the world around you. Mike,
you win. We're changing it.
We are. Okay.
Yeah. You know, we've had taglines of various kinds over the years.
About issues that matter to you was around for
a really
decades.
Long time. Yep. And we're going to change it. We were trying the world around you, thinking that would express something that you get from the Ideas Network. And I think that's true. But in the end, maybe it wasn't conveying the meaning that we wanted. So the new tagline we're working on, and you'll start to hear it as we roll it out into various spots in recordings and so on, is Where Wisconsin Connects. And it can be where we connect to each other, where we connect to our politicians or to our artists or whatever else. That's the basic idea. And sort of pulling the lens back a little bit more, one of the reasons that pretty much all radio stations have such taglines is that it does help listeners who are newer to the station identify what they're about in some way. Talk about issues that matter to you was very clear. We used it for a very long time. And sometimes it's your NPR station or Hot 97.3 or whatever it is. We're really just trying to help people to make sure they identify the station, know what it's about, and hopefully come back again.
Hey, nobody ever wants to use my tagline. We talk to people about stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe that's too vague. I don't know.
We had a joke at a station that I worked at. I'll put it in a Wisconsin context. If it happens in Wisconsin, it's news to us.
It almost sounds like a Les Nessman line kind
yes,
of from WKRP
yeah.
in Cincinnati.
Yep. Well, the TV show we were working on was a little bit like that.
Let's go back to our callers now. Esty is on the line in Madison. Esty, hi.
Hi. So I understand that you are trying to reach to people of all political bands and you know, to cover all of Wisconsin. And I think that's a fine mission. But I'm really concerned to have recently heard speakers from both the McIver Institute and News Trackers both of which are not really news organizations. They are the so-called journalistic stormtroopers of the extreme right. And I find myself really concerned when they are on your morning show presented as though they're legitimate journalists. They really are not. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say about that, Mike.
Sure. Thank you, Esty, for the call. One of the things that is an endless challenge for us is, if we really are going to use the old slogan, talk about issues that matter to you, we really want to make sure that we invite a broad spectrum of guests on, because it has been our belief going back to the beginning that hearing from all sides, including people that are way to the left and way to the right and maybe even have very different ideas in the center, that's part of the role that we want to take. And so part of what I hear in that is we may need to work harder to be sure to identify where the guest is coming from. I know we do really try to do that, but that might be something that we could do even better. And in any case, it is our intention to invite people of all different kinds to express their views and ideas on the Ideas Network.
Esty, thanks for the call. We had a question from a Milwaukee listener. The EW Scripps Company, they write, is divesting itself of all of its radio assets, including 620 WTMJ and 94.5 WKTI in Milwaukee. Here's their question. Would this open up the opportunity for WPR to pursue possibly buying a station there and using it as a place to put a news and classical affiliate, since we don't have one in the Milwaukee market? We have the Ideas Network there. We don't have our news and classical.
Except on HD, that's right.
Right.
Yeah, on HD radio. Well, you know, if there were a donation of such a station, we'd certainly accept it. But typically what we find is that stations in a community like Milwaukee, in terms of the size, that is, of the community, cost many millions of dollars. And so unless we can find an angel who wants to buy it for us, unfortunately, that's probably not an option.
Well, thanks for that question. We do. I mean, maybe we've got this pledge drive coming up in February, Mike. It's 5 days. If we can make an extra, you know, couple million dollars on
that.
Might
be a down payment on that, yeah. Mm. You know, WTMJ, I'm sure, will be a really valuable property. They have a great signal. It's heard in a good part of Wisconsin. And so we'll see what happens to it. But probably it won't be coming here to Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I know before we run out of time, behind the scenes, we've been talking. We just had the holiday season. Some people might have gotten one of these smart thingies at home where you talk to it, you say its name, and it'll do stuff or order your pizza or whatever. I don't have one of these, obviously. A lot of Super Bowl ads about them last night.
Right. So you could say, Alexa, because that's the name of the one for the Amazon Echo. Alexa, play NPR.
Right.
Or Google, play NPR, or WPR, or the Ideas Network. And people are also able to train those to do other things. Weird that it's a computer. You can train it, but you can have it listen. We've got a guide online at WPR.org, so you can get started on that if you have one of those devices.
See, I worry about saying the sentence like you just, if you say the name and then make a donation to Wisconsin Public Radio, is there robot going to do that if we tell it to? I don't know.
Eventually that will be possible.
If they're listening on the radio.
Yeah, well, but, you know, that means they'll have to tie their account to their Alexa thing.
Ah, okay.
So they'd know they were doing it.
So it's not that easy.
No.
Mike, thanks, as always, for joining us.
Great to be here.
Morning show next month, I think.
Sounds right.
That's Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He joined us to share the latest details about Wisconsin Public Radio. You can always give us feedback. Find out how. Go over to WPR.org. You can listen live and share your feedback while you're there. The Packers were, of course, not in yesterday's Super Bowl, sure, but there was a lot of Wisconsin news as part of Super Bowl weekend. As we heard on Friday, halftime performer Justin Timberlake wouldn't commit to rooting for the Eagles or the Patriots. All he would say in an interview was, "Go Pack, go." And this weekend, former UW Badger football star J.J. Watt was named the NFL's Walter Payton Man of the Year. Here's why. He and his foundation set out to raise $200,000 in relief funds for Houston after it was hit by Hurricane Harvey. They ended up raising $37 million.
This award is about the inherent good that lies within humanity. It is about the city of Houston and its ability to overcome adversity at a time when it all seemed lost. It is about the hundreds of thousands of people from all over the country and all over the world who donated to a city they may never have been to people they may never meet, but they donated simply because they saw their fellow human going through a difficult time and they wanted to help out.
J.J. Watt on video from NFL.com. And Hall of Fame announcements came out this weekend. The long wait is over for Green Bay Packers legend Jerry Kramer. Kramer played 11 seasons as a guard for the Packers and helped the team win two Super Bowls, plus a few pre-Super Bowl league championships. His most famous play, making the key block in the game-winning touchdown in the legendary Ice Bowl. This is Kramer's 11th time on the Hall of Fame ballot. He'll be inducted on August 4th. So some reasons for Wisconsin football fans to celebrate Super Bowl weekend. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.